Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Of course, the best news of the day is that all 12 boys and their coach and the team that was inside the cave have all been able to exit safely. We don't know what the medical condition of the kids and the coach are, but everything we've heard so far has been good. Anmar Mirza has joined us for the last couple of weeks talking about this. He's a spokesperson in a sort of, it's a volunteer organization. It's a national cave rescue organization here in the United States. Anmar, it's John Williams. Welcome back to the show. So, I mean, are you surprised or were you getting a feeling that maybe they would be able to pull this off?
Very pleasantly surprised that this was as smooth as it was. I was expecting more problems with it. Of course, I don't want to diminish the fact that there was a fatality involved with this rescue. The Thai cave diver who died saving these kids, at least his death is no long is not a It won't be in vain.
Yeah, no kidding. I said just as we were introducing you that we don't know what the medical condition of the kids is. Have you heard anything else about that?
Other than what I've been seeing in the media, I don't have any direct information.
Yeah, and I was also wondering because they said they were okay, they got them out alive, but I wonder if you are in an oxygen deprived situation instead of 22%, they were breathing air that was about 15%. If that might have some long term neurological impacts on the kids, I wonder if there might be some consequences as a result of being in that environment.
Most likely not, even though these were kids and they're in the developmental stages. 15% oxygen is like the equivalent of being at about 13,000 feet or so. And while you certainly don't want to live in that environment, the long-term repercussions are minimal, if any. And the biggest concern actually wasn't the lower oxygen in that environment, but was the elevated levels of carbon dioxide.
Oh, yeah.
Those create actually some pretty strong physiological effects that don't have long-term repercussions, but in the short term could have been dangerous.
I wonder if there's a moral to this story looking back. I mean, obviously don't go into a cave if you don't know how you're going to get out, but I wonder if there's what the takeaways are from this story, Anmar.
Well, everybody thinks there's no consequences to what I do, but it's worthwhile for all of us to remember that if we get in trouble, there will be people who will probably be risking their lives to try and help us get out of it. And so to be fair to those people, you shouldn't take unnecessary risks. And sometimes, in this situation, you not necessarily could see the risks happening, but just always be aware that there are people out there who put their lives on the line to try and get you out of trouble. So don't take that lightly.
That's a nice point, because I think a lot of times we think about that when there's some mountaintop rescue or some knuckleheads climbing a skyscraper or some daredevils doing something and now they're in peril. And on the one hand, you say, hey, it's your life. You can do whatever you want. But on the other hand, somebody may die trying to save you or rescue you. And so I guess you need to keep that in mind. I sure haven't heard any criticism, though. Maybe because none is warranted, maybe because it's too soon. But I have not heard any criticism of the coach or the kids for getting themselves in that situation. Have you?
You get private people who are kind of rumbling about it. But honestly, it's easy to second guess just anything when you're looking at it from a remove. I think most of us have done dumb things in our lives, and whether or not this was a dumb thing that they did or they truly did not know what was going to happen. We don't have the ability to judge that from the outside. I would challenge anybody to be, as they say, he is without sin, throw the first stone, or something along those lines.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of some people I know who were hiking in the woods and got kind of off the trail, and now it's getting dark, and it's going to get cold fast, and how are we going to get out of here? And, you know, they weren't bad or dumb or daredevil-y people, but all of a sudden you can find yourself just by, you know, a misstep in harm's way. I guess that does happen.
Absolutely, and a lot of the places I go caving are very, very far out there and very deep removed, and I'm always evaluating this, you know, if I get in trouble, A, could I get myself out? And if I can't get myself out, could the people that I know who are out on the surface get me out? And there are places and situations where I don't do something because I know that a rescue would not be possible from that area.
Do you know much more about the exact journey the kids took? We've all seen the graphs, and we know that part of the time their head was above water and part of the time they had to dive down and then back up. The last of the kids, we believe, were the weakest of the kids. Do you know any more about, for instance, how long were they underwater breathing the air and from the tanks, and more about the exact journey that they took?
So as far as their actual time underwater, I would only be speculating. I do know that the limiting factor for getting them out was the amount of air tanks they could bring in. So that gives me an idea, but if I were to hazard a guess, I would say that probably 90% of their evacuation was either in air walking or crawling or swimming with air over them, and only a very small percentage of it was the diving. And that was a direct result of the weeks of pumping the water down, and that's one of the reasons that there was kind of that impetus towards the end to get them out before the rains came and brought that back up again, because the water coming up would have changed that from, you know, a small percentage that they had to dive to a much larger percentage.
Yeah, I wonder how long can you breathe on a tank of air like that?
So for those who are involved with scuba diving, and I am an advanced open water diver, you're taught these things. And generally speaking, your standard air cylinder will give you approximately 80 cubic feet of air, and how much and how fast you use it depends on your own physiology as well as your depth. So the deeper you are, the faster you use your air, because basically at 33 feet, you're in the equivalent of an additional atmosphere of pressure, and so you double your air consumption.
So what does that mean then? If they were doubling their air consumption down there, how would you guess it? 2 hours, 1 hour, 4 hours?
I think you might have misunderstood. When I say that you're doubling your air consumption, as you go down deeper, every 33 feet, like adding another atmosphere of pressure, which decreases the amount of time you have. So I can dive for about 50 minutes on an 80 cubic foot tank if I'm going only going down maybe 20 to 30 feet. But if I go down to 90 feet, I may only get 10 or 12 minutes on that same tank.
That's all?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Boy, I wonder what this is going to do to caving. I wonder what the people that are like you, love this sport, probably want to share it with people and so forth. We've never thought or learned more about going to a cave in this country than we have now. But I don't know if this is going to encourage people to take it up safely or discourage people.
Well, actually, it does both. After every major cave rescue, what we tend to find is you get some of the people out there who are just, they're encouraged to, they want to go and test their mettle against the cave that, you know, almost killed people or killed people or whatever. And those are the ones that actually tend to cause further rescues, because they're the ones who won't try to do it safely. So that can happen. You can have some people who go, oh, I don't ever want to do that. And then you get other people who go, hey, that sounds like an interesting hobby. Let me learn what I can about it. And they'll look up people who can introduce it to them safely. And caving is a very safe hobby if you follow the basic rules.
Well, when you go into a cave, like I've been in Merrimack Caverns, which is probably not what you do, because it has a gift shop. So if you go caving, are you generally exploring areas that are lit and marked and you know, or are you kind of on your own?
Well, so the ones that are lit and marked and all that, those are tourist or commercial caves. Of course, I enjoy seeing some of those, but most of the caving, 99% of the caving I do, I'm going into places that the general public is not allowed to go into. I'm oftentimes finding brand new caves. We call it virgin caves, so nobody's seen it before. And I've been involved in opening lots and lots, many miles of virgin cave in my career. And those are unique challenges. But caving has a lot for just about everything. Some people like photography. Some people like mapping and surveying. Some people like finding new caves. Others of us like doing rescue. I mean, rescue is as much as a hobby for me as it is something that I do because it's part of the community.
Well, it sure was lucky for those kids. After 10 days, British diver pops up in the water and goes, "Oh my God, they're here." I mean, they didn't know where those kids were. They found them, but it was 10 days in before they found them.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, is that when they were looking for them, you know, in a cave search, when we find somebody lost in a cave, or we're looking for somebody lost in a cave, we don't usually also have to deal with carrying our air with us and then going in a certain distance, having to carry an extra air tank in, stage it there, come back, get another air tank, bring it in, come back, get another one, bring it in, and then move forward the next little stage with those tanks until you basically are so far away from the entrance, supply chain just becomes very, very difficult. And that's part of what took so long. But they're laying the lines. They're doing all of that stuff that enabled them to do the search. And then, of course, luckily they found them as part of that search.
I've been thinking about those guys before, you know, the first 10 days where they're looking for the kids. You're swimming through that muck, hoping that you'll find them, not even knowing if you're going down the right way. Do you have enough air to get back? Will you be able to see? Will you get caught? Talk about courageous. When you are exploring caves in Indiana, which is where we've been speaking to you for the last couple of days, or the Midwest, and you go deep into some cave system and you get in there, are there snakes or bats or spiders or things that would make a person jump and bonk their head? Or when you're that far into a cave, there's no food for the animals in there, so there ain't no animals in there.
So that answer really actually is a variable one. So near the entrance of the cave, you tend to find more wildlife. Deeper in the cave, you tend to find a little less. But the thing is that the wildlife in the cave, there's nothing in there that's going to hurt people. And for them, that's the habitat they live in, and we're actually disturbing them in there. So cavers are very careful to not disturb the wildlife in the cave. And, you know, certainly I've been in caves with populations of bats that are a quarter of a million bats in the cave, where we're walking underneath them and trying very hard not to disturb them. These are things that you can encounter, but you don't always encounter them. As a matter of fact, once you get a few hundred feet away from the entrance, usually the biggest thing you're going to encounter are very few small insects, and there's a lot of microbial activity in caves.
And Mar Mirza, National Coordinator for the National Cave Rescue Commission. So if folks want to get involved, give me a website that you would recommend people surf and find a little more out, Anmar.
Sure. The National Speleological Society website, www.caves.org, has all sorts of great information, including guides of the responsible caving, how to get started caving, and who to contact in your area. We have chapters, we call them grottos. They're chapters of the NSS all over the country, actually all over even the world.
Caves.org. Anmar, if we can do something for you down the road, you make sure you let us know, okay? We so appreciate your time the last couple weeks.
Thank you.